Welcome to the Sportscast, April 3rd, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, you can leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can listen to us 24/7. Visit our website, thesportscast.net. Also, follow us on Twitter, on the Sportscast One, also Instagram, the Sportscast One. You can also check out our app, the Sportscast for iOS. College basketball national championship is here. It is tonight between San Diego State and number 4 UConn. And join us all the way from the West Coast, Nicholas Hildell. Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Truly appreciate it. Pretty sad that it's all coming to an end tonight, but it should still be a pretty good game.
Should be a pretty good game tonight. Unlikely finalists, a lot of people are saying, but we'll get into the preview a little bit later in the show. Let's talk to our, let's go into the final four games that happened this past weekend. Number 5, SD San Diego beating FAU 72-71. A buzzer beater shooting shot by Lamont Butler. FAU was leading most of the game. I believe San Diego did not lead at all till the end. Your thoughts over this matchup?
Yeah, this was quite the thrill ride throughout the game. I mean, it's everything you could have won out of a Final Four. And, you know, I just feel bad for the people who decided not to watch you because there's no big power conference schools because they cost themselves an opportunity to watch one of the best Final Four games I think we've seen in quite some time, just with just how close this game felt, particularly later on. I think that was the biggest thing. I mean, FAU, they took it to San Diego State, and they really surprised the Aztecs, I think, and just the pace FAU was able to take that game to, and it caught a normally really good SDSU defense off guard. But the Aztecs, they made some crucial adjustments in that second half, found a way to keep chipping away because that was really all they could do, was just chip away at it. And ultimately, they chipped away at it enough to where they had a shot at the end and Lamont Butler getting the job done. But, I mean, I tip my hat to FAU with what they've done this whole season. They have had a phenomenal run at things, going all the way to the Final Four. I don't think that program's going anywhere. Dusty May seats have been secured long-term, which is huge for a program like that to ensure your coach does not just leave you immediately, unlike a few others we've already seen this offseason. So I tip my hat to FAU, but for San Diego State, I mean, that's what March is all about. I mean, haven't seen a buzzer beater in an NCAA tournament game in about 2 years before that shot from Butler. So he will instantly join the March lore of legendary names for that shot. And probably becomes the biggest name in the SDSU program right next to Kawhi Leonard for that shot to send the Aztecs to the national championship.
Yeah, quite a memorable shot. I did not see that coming. At what point of the game you thought FAU was going to win this, Nick?
I was really surprised at how SDSU was able to just, you know, make that comeback. I mean, most of the early parts of that second half, there was a double-digit FAU lead, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, my gosh. I mean, I was just surprised. I mean, I wasn't sure how the Aztecs were going to come back, particularly given that FAU had just made SDSU's defense look like a mess, comparatively speaking. But, man, I give a lot of credit to the Aztecs for finding those crucial adjustments because they needed it real bad. Getting some good performances. Butler had his big shot, but Matt Bradley found his touch after losing it in the regionals week. The last week in Louisville, he found his touch again for 21 big ones. I thought FAU was going to win that thing early second half, really carry on midway through. But once SDSU got that thing close, it just stayed close until right at the end. And it was kind of perfect planning, almost you could say, perfect impromptu planning from SDSU to just hang around and get that lead right at the end.
How do you see the future of FAU now with coach Dusty May? Do you think he'll stay in FAU or do you think he might go to a bigger school?
I think the reports are that he has that they've really kind of worked on a long-term extension. Though they've got that security there. FAU, among with several others, moving to the American Athletic Conference from Conference USA. That's a big deal for the conference after losing Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida to get some good basketball programs. I think it's the biggest thing there. If FAU can continue this, extend this, that it's not just a one-year run, wonder ride for the Owls, I think that's the biggest thing, though. They're going to the American alongside North Texas, alongside UAB, two of the what I thought were the best basketball programs in Conference USA. They're jumping ship to the American, and I think that is going to provide a very interesting feel to the American for several years to come. How some of these newer programs moving to, from Conference USA to the American handle programs like Memphis going forward. I think that's going to be quite interesting to see, but I'm curious to just see where this all goes for FAU. I'm hoping it's not a one-year wonder kind of ride, but I could honestly see this being kind of that one-year ride, but it's a tough task for Dustin May to keep this going.
But Dustin May has said, indicated he will stay in FAU. It's not about the money, so we'll see where this program goes. As Nick said, going to a better conference does help and hopefully keep the competition going. Let's go to the other game. Another Florida team losing against UConn. Defense, unbelievable. Something that Nick and I have been talking about for years. Defense wins championships. We'll see tonight if that does happen. But UConn led the whole game. I watched the whole game. It was not even close. They doled out drama-free beatdown. Nothing going on there. Adam Sango, 21 points. Jordan Hawkins, 13 points. Your thoughts over this game?
Yeah, this is so typical of what UConn has done to teams outside of the Big East all season long, even going back to November, playing an MT in Portland and beating teams like Iowa State and Alabama convincingly. So they always had this in them. They just kind of struggled within a much more physical Big East conference. But again, once they got right back out of conference again, here come the Huskies just rolling on through, laying waste to everybody. And I actually do have to give Miami some credit. I mean, they did not just lay down. I mean, they got this thing back to within single digits for a brief moment in time. But really, it was just UConn the whole time, really. I mean, it was something truly to behold. I mean, once UConn got out on a pretty solid stretch to close the first half, that was really it. I mean, Miami tried to make this a closer game, getting it back to within single digits, like I said, on a couple of occasions within that second half. But UConn just, you know, they rode it out. And, I mean, that's all they can really do. I mean, you're not asking for a 20-point blowout year. Just get a comfortable win. And it was very comfortable for UConn, very comfortable.
Good sign for tonight. Miami, coached by Larry Larinaga, had a fantastic season. Surprised a lot of people. Beating Houston was probably one of the biggest upsets. Your thoughts over this program and the future for Miami?
Yeah, this is an interesting program because you have guys like John Lewis who have just been outspoken about the way they handle NIL. And the way he paid Nigel Pack the $800,000 to get him from Kansas State to Miami via the portal, though you're not really supposed to do that. But again, it's the way NCAA has treated NIL. I mean, it's been all bets have pretty much been off. But I think the way they built this team is going to be the way Miami builds it going forward. And many other programs have to do it too. But for this program, they had the returners and guys like Isaiah Wong, Nigel Pack and Norchad Omiron ended up being two of the better transfer portal gets of the entire country. But really the big thing from this particular game, Luka Poplar's 0 points. That really hurt the Hurricanes. He had turned into a pretty solid contributor for the Hurricanes in this tournament. It just wasn't going for him. And Harlan Beverly and Bensley Joseph, they tried to make up for it, but they needed a lot more from guys like Pack and even Norchad Omiron. Just to really get things going. But I think as long as Miami plays the NIL game in the portal as well as they have this year, they're going to be a factor. I mean, it's going to take years and years to truly figure out the long-term effect of NIL. and to figure out which programs are consistently doing this in the portal year after year or year. But the way John Ruiz handled it this past offseason, I think Miami's gonna be one of those programs that continues to do this time and time again. It's gonna be a matter they can do it consistently. And could this extend to other programs like football? I mean, that's something that is yet to be seen. And that long-term effort, like I said, is kind of really up in the air, but a lot of promising stuff, I think, in Miami that to be so outspoken about NIL with guys like Omir and Pack, and to get this to a Final Four as a 5 seed, yeah, this is not going away anytime soon. And I think people have to realize that. It's not going away.
It's not going away. Head coach Jim Larinaga has been with there 12 seasons. Classic coach. He's missing that championship in his trophy case. What do you think about his legacy? Do you think he needs that chip? Or, hey, he's done a lot for this game.
I don't think he needs it. He needs a championship to be the greatest coach in two programs' respective history. He was the one that led George Mason way back in 2006 to the Final Four, getting Miami to a Final Four, and to a point to where Miami's making second weekends at a decent rate under Jim Larinaga. I mean, that's the biggest thing, that he's done this now at two programs, and he's done it at Miami really darn good. So I think for him, it's gotta go hand in hand with the NIL deal drama, but you can really just kind of take this Larinaga legacy and be really, really happy about it. I think Miami absolutely will take the kind of year it got, and I think it's gonna end up being a little more consistent, I think, for Miami if they're able to play the NIL game as well as I think they're going to be able to do. And I think for Jim Larinaga, they have the guy, an experienced coach who has all kinds of experience of tournament experience, taking teams on runs. And I absolutely think he has made Miami a much better program in this era of changing tides. Larinaga is still at the older front of those coaches, and he's done an exceptional job. I mean, to take a program like Miami to the Elite Eight round and back-to-back years is no small feat. And so I really give him credit for that. 4 second weekend appearances in his tenure in Miami, this being the first Final Four. He has a lot to hang his hat on as a coach, and he's done wonders for this Miami program, particularly the last few seasons.
Jim Larinaga has been to the Final Four before, back in 2006 with George Mason University, and he's done it again in 2023. Only 73 years old. He's getting up there in age, but a lot of people are doing a lot of wonders and later in life. So we'll see what happens with this Miami program. As Nick says, hopefully it spills into the football program as well. So we'll see what happens there for Miami. Let's go to tonight's big game, the national championship game between San Diego State and UConn. Two teams' most unlikely matchups. They were not predicted. I believe it was under 37 people who chose them, I believe. I was reading some stat out there. But your thoughts over tonight's game. Is it going to be a UConn beatdown with their defense, or is San Diego State has some tricks under their sleeves?
The Aztecs have a load of experience. I mean, this could be the most experienced team UConn has played all year, with all the juniors and seniors that this team has. So I definitely think that that has to be taken into equation. But I think for UConn, the way it plays the game, it really takes San Diego State's backcourt. They're going to try and probably take that as much out of it as possible, especially on offense. They're going to try to use their guards to distribute it to guys like Adama Sanogo, Alex Caravan, even Donovan Klingon at moments when he comes off the bench. They have that. I think it's a pretty sizable advantage down there inside. And that is what leads me to think that this could be a UConn beatdown by around 15 points or so. I think for SDSU, if they have a fighting chance, is that they have the experience. And I think that they're not going to be they're not going to be let down at any point if UConn gets on a run. I think that they'll have a lot of poise to get through this championship game. And if their backcourt's on one, I mean, if they're shooting well, I mean they could beat anybody with guys like Matt Bradley if he's on. Darian Trem, one of the better scorers, not just the Mountain West, but anywhere you could argue. And obviously, Ahmad Butler showing his clutch ability in the semis, trying to carry that over to the championship perhaps. So there's a lot of good qualities about this SDSU backcourt. But I think Nathan Mendez is going to have a really hard task with Adamas Sanogo and Alex Caravan. LaShawn Johnson is kind of in that same way. And I think as long as UConn commands the paint, they'll be able to win this game pretty big as long as the guards are distributing the way they should be. I don't see this being too close. I see it being very similar to the UConn-Miami semi. But, of course, throughout this tournament, I've been wrong countless times. So, I mean, it would be fitting if this ended up being a close championship and we got a classic out of this. But I am not seeing that within any of the individual matchups, within the team matchup. A lot of those signs are pointing towards this being a UConn demolition, even if it is UConn playing close and just winning and going away.
Yeah, this could be a short night. Let me look at going back into this tournament, Gonzaga. They hold down the number one offense against Zags, season low in points. They also slowed down Miami, who had the number five offense. So UConn has that defense. What about offense? Who has the edge there?
I still think that as long as UConn does do the good distribution they've been known for, I mean, Adama Sanogo is likely the best player on the court. He has killed it in this tournament, over 20 points a game in the tournament, close to 10 rebounds a game in the tournament. He has been a beast in there. And I think that the guards, they have understood their role very clearly. Several of those UConn guards are pretty high in the assist per game category for this tournament because they understand that give it to Sanogo, his strength and size will take care of the rest. And I think we'll kind of see that in this game. Though Nathan Mensah on defense is going to have a hard task. And he's done this before pretty well. I mean, San Diego State's defense against Creighton, particularly in the second half, in the back in the Elite Eight, was really good to watch. And I thought that Creighton team, I had seen them in person multiple times throughout the year in a game without Ryan Kalkbrenner, a couple of games with Kalkbrenner in Denver. Creighton looked like a really good team. I could survive any kind of night as long as they had the advantage in size. San Diego State kind of flipped that a bit with guys like Nathan Mensah and a really good bench guy as well who can do kind of a very similar thing. They're just going to have to focus on that inside. I just think UConn has too many guys they can go to. If Sanogo's not going well, I think Alex Carabant's a fantastic secondary front court piece. They can bring in Donovan Klingon, 7'2", and he has played really well in spots throughout this year as a redshirt freshman. So I just think that UConn just has too many bodies. They can rotate that front court well. I just think it's going to end up being too much. But San Diego State's backcourt, they can shoot the ball pretty well. They can score. And I think if this game is close, it's going to be because that SDSU backcourt having a really good shooting night.
And we'll get into the prediction towards the end of the show. I would like to point out Coach Hurley, very humble guy, really believes in the program, UConn. Your thoughts over his career so far? Young coach, but your thoughts over his career so far?
Yeah, proved himself at a place like Rhode Island. He has obviously proven himself at a place like UConn, guiding UConn through its return to the Big East and just doing wonders. Kind of taking the foundation of what Kevin Ollie had. Wasn't the best. Ollie had a national championship there, but that was a lot of Jim Calhoun's guys and just wasn't quite going as well. They bring in Dan Hurley. He's done fantastic at UConn. And I certainly think that a title win tonight certifies UConn's place as a blue blood in this sport. Five titles in a quarter century, perhaps with a win tonight, of course. Only one of them will have been as a one seed, the first one. I mean, and just kind of going back to it, that's pretty insane what UConn has been able to do. You know, when they're not a one seed, they still have stars. And all of their teams, their title teams, have guys. I mean, the Kemba Walker year in 2011, Shabazz Napier, the title after that. They've always had really good performers. This year's Adama Sanogo with a really good front court combined with great distributors in the back court. And I think Dan Hurley has done an excellent job managing this team well, seeing the championship potential in the non-conference slate, having some bumps in the road in conference play through a very physical Big East, but understanding that not a lot of teams are going to play as physical as a lot of those Big East teams, and kind of riding out the storm. And this team's kind of back to its November form that made this team one of the highest ranked teams in the country after the PK Invitational and all that tournament, what that presented for UConn. I mean, they're back to that kind of form. It's a very dangerous UConn team when they get on that kind of run. So, I mean, Dan Hurley's done an excellent job. Truly one of those guys that will probably end up being at that spot for a long time to come.
Yeah, UConn definitely has a basketball history, and looking forward to see what happens tonight. If that continued their dynasty, I would call it. It might be too soon to call it, but we'll see what happens tonight. Yesterday, LSU won the women's championship against Iowa, 102-85. Your thoughts over this matchup? It was pretty exciting. Two new teams, never won it before. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, terrible officiating aside, I don't think I would have mattered. LSU's offense is on a whole nother level of excellence. I mean, we obviously kind of knew what Angel Reese brought to the table, but like Daisia Williams, Alexis Morens, Jasmine Carson were all brilliant to watch. And I think particularly for Jasmine Carson, that's a game that many people are going to remember that name going forward and try to watch her develop. It was an unreal performance. I mean, Caitlin Clark had a pretty solid game, threw up some wild shots that some of them went in, some of them didn't. It was kind of one of those nights from Caitlin Clark. And then that whole Iowa team kind of rallies around her. And, you know, they got into foul trouble way too early in that game, Clark included. And that really kind of began the downfall, I think. And I think throughout the fourth quarter, it was pretty obvious who was going to win that game. But big year for LSU. I thought going in a two-loss SEC team with a three seed didn't quite sound right. Didn't quite think they get to win the national title. I thought they would win that region going into the tournament, but they have had an outstanding season. I mean, Kim Mulkey, the coach of LSU, she's done it again with the second school. Had those titles with Baylor, now wins one for LSU. And I don't think that Tiger program's going anywhere anytime soon. I think Kim Mulkey has found something with that program. And she might be able to continue it, but I wouldn't be shocked if both these schools were back in a very similar spot. I mean, obviously not knowing the roster turnover situation, but Iowa with Caitlin Clark, I think she'll be back next year. So she's going to be out for revenge for that. And the women's game just has a way of having stars throughout multiple years, and these stars become marketable in college in a way that the men's game isn't quite able to replicate because of the one and done era that will continue for the foreseeable future. Those bright freshmen that go into the men's game, they're gone in a year. And some upperclassmen do turn into stars of their own right, but it's not like people are watching them with a key microscope for all 4 years. Like fans of the women's game do with players like Caitlin Clark and UConn's Paige Beckers, who was unfortunately injured early on in the year. So, I mean, it's one of those things for the women's game that just has so much momentum. I really can't wait to see what's in store for the women's game going forward. There's a lot of momentum there with the star power of the game, the way they're able to build up fresh stars, keep them around the college game for multiple years. I think it makes it really exciting. And there's a lot more parity now in the women's March Madness than there ever has been. And I think that adds another layer of excitement, particularly to the women's tournament, that's starting to make that more and more of a must-watch event from the first rounds onward.
Yeah, it was a very exciting tournament for the women's. I really have to commend Kim Mulkey. Great outfit last night. I loved it. And she's a great coach. LSU, congratulations. All right, tonight, the main feast, the main entree. UConn is favorited, according to FanDuel Sportsbook, 7.5-point favorite over SDSU. Nick, give us your final prediction, score line, and everything.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be UConn by double digits. I mean, I would say around 15 points, but I wouldn't be shocked if it was around 10 to 15. I think the Aztecs will fight. They'll give this a really good go. I think they'll fall behind early. They're not going to go down like Miami did as far as waiting until it's too late to make that comeback. I think the Aztecs will find some form. And ultimately, the UConn front court, I think, is just going to be too much. UConn will certify his status as a blue blood tonight. And I think that conversation has to go now in favor of UConn with a national championship tonight. And the way they've been able to do it without having to be a one seed, I mean, they haven't been a one since 2009, and they're looking at their third title since that year. I mean, it's unreal what the UConn program has done in a tournament that typically has a one seed to win it. It really is remarkable what that program's been able to do over the last 15 years or so, just the way it's been able to win titles, have good teams that are set up well for March. Another example of it, and 40 minutes away from cutting down the nets.
It's quite remarkable, the runs of this tournament and teams that were surprising. Which team surprised you the most that they, you know, they just went out pretty early and you were surprised? Wow, this team, I was looking forward to it. They were deep in my bracket, but they did not come through. Which team was that?
I think it kind of goes down to those second weekend upsets of Houston and Alabama happening back to back. I mean, I thought particularly Houston was really well set up. I mean, Bama having its big star as a freshman typically does not portray very well in March. You typically have to have a lot more experience. Certainly missed out on that myself. But I thought Houston was a lot more set up to get to the Final Four in its home city. I thought that was a golden opportunity for the Cougars. They just couldn't take advantage of it. But I think this particular tournament, maybe some would say they had a little too much upset, but I think this is more of what college basketball and the men's side is turning into. It's turning into unbelievable parity. There is no elite team. They're all a bunch of good to great teams. And this tournament kind of reflected the season at large, to where you had teams rotating at the number one spot on a weekly basis. Teams were going up and down the rankings like crazy throughout the year. And to me, I thought a pool of three could win it. Turns out that pool was a lot larger than I ever could have envisioned. And certainly a season that will be unforgettable. But for the long-term future of college basketball, it's now about, does NIL in the portal make this an annual ritual? Will this calm down as players of the fifth year of eligibility slowly weighing out of the system? There's still a lot of unknowns for the immediate and long-term future of this sport. That's going to end up being really exciting to see how this ends up going over the course of time. And of course, the NCAA starting to really crack down hard on transfers transferred for a second time and third time outside of graduate transfers. What does that do to the transfer portal mania that everyone has now? There's a lot of unknowns that I think will play itself out over the next 4 to 5 years. That's going to make the evolution of this sport and the evolution of roster building so much fun to watch. So many more wrinkles now than there ever has been. Some of it may not be for the betterment of the student athletes and the game itself, but that is a lot that has yet to be determined on that side of it. Right now, there's a lot of endless possibilities, and I think that's what makes college basketball the best, that there are so many endless possibilities of how these programs go about building their rosters. And it's only going to evolve ever more, I think, over the next 4 or 5 years before it starts to calm down and you have a set thing. But I still think COVID is still wreaking havoc on a lot of that, with some players having that fifth year of eligibility still. I mean, it's just going to make things a whole lot more fun this offseason, very similar to this past offseason where things are happening almost every day.
Well, there you have it. NIL changing the game as well in basketball, also football. And Nick said his opinion over it. It's quite interesting what's going to happen in the next couple of years. Hopefully college basketball is still going to be as good as this year's. Good surprising teams.
I think it will be. I mean, I think that you get the combination of the fresh stars that a lot of fans of the program may end up tuning into a game or so in February and March to see how they perform before they go to the big leagues. I still think you'll have this endless cycle of really good veterans that stick around, naturally become those stars within their team, stars within their conference. I mean, there's still a lot to believe in college basketball. And the stock, I think, for the sport is still very, very positive. And that goes for the women, too. I mean, The stock of college basketball is still very, very strong. And I think for the casuals that tune in only in late February and March, they're missing out on a lot of the fun. These weeks, always one of my best times of the year. Early conference play is always an intriguing time to see how these teams start to evolve over the course of time. I still think college basketball has a lot of intriguing factors to it, and particularly these next few years with the way that the portal has made college basketball into a year-long cycle almost. There's still a lot to be excited about for this sport, and I certainly think that only because of one Final Four rating being down because of not a lot of blue blood being in it, I certainly don't think that's a reflection of the sport at large. I think the sport at large is very much continuing to be on the rise. Particularly in the regular season. I think more and more people are figuring out that college, there's a lot to love about college basketball throughout the year, and I hope the trend continues.
The madness still continues. Tonight, UConn versus San Diego State in Houston at the NRG Stadium on Monday night, tipping off at 9:20 p.m. on CBS, also streamed online and on television as well. So looking forward to tonight. Nick Hudel, what is the best way to reach you online to ask you, hey, what should I have to eat tonight, Taco Bell or Burger King?
You can reach me at Twitter, at Hudel Sports. I mean, it's still a very exciting time for me. As Arizona State baseball continues, and they've been playing pretty darn well as of late, so you want to follow me there. So of course, I'll be retweeting a bunch of updates from not only myself, but our other great reporters at Inferno Intel to give you all the latest there. And that'll be something I really look forward to seeing how that ends up playing out. While I'm in the process of commencement and the job search, it's a quite an interesting time of my life, but I'm really looking forward to this last month of college, seeing out the ASU baseball season, and then just really going from there, seeing what's next.
Going into the next cycle. You can reach us at the Sportscast One or the sportscast.net. Our website will be live tweeting tonight with UConn versus SDSU. So you looking forward to tonight and see who's going to lift that trophy. And those students get pretty excited about that. Anyways, Nick, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And this was your